Hi, I'm Jo Allen. I'm a holistic health teacher and founder of The Humble Warrior based in St. Leonard's-on-Sea.
Hello, I'm Heidi Rickson and I'm a Reiki healer, teacher and sound healer.
Welcome to Resonance Space. Hello and welcome to Resonance Space and this episode on what is sound healing?
What is sound healing?
Exactly. Exactly. What is sound healing? How do we define? Because sound is a huge topic, but then sound healing is one part of that. So, yes. So if someone's never actually heard of sound healing, mm-hmm. we're going to try and explain what it actually is from our point of view.
It's the only one we have.
Exactly. So how would you sort of start, like if someone said to you, what is sound healing?
I would say, what's sound?
Yeah, so to take it back a step.
Sound, what would you say sound is? I know what I think it is.
I mean, it's got to be vibrations because everything in the universe is vibrations. And sound is just a way that we process certain vibrations moving through the air. Moving through different matter and how we perceive it in our eardrum is the way I would explain sound. How about you?
Similar. It's our brain's kind of translation of what our ears are sensing. Mm. And then we only have between 20 hertz and 20,000 hertz spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Only.
That's it. That's all we got. That's all we got.
That sounds like a lot. What a hurts? Someone might say, what a hurts?
Ow. What a hurts? It sounds pretty painful.
Exactly.
It's just the frequency designation, kind of a, like a gallon, you know, a measure of, a unit of vibrational frequency.
Yeah, the speed of the frequency is the hertz, I guess. And you can imagine it, I suppose, physically as those kind of wavy lines. You know, that kind of like, if it's a very slow, shallow wave, it's a low frequency. If it's a quite a high, busy one, it's a higher frequency. And yeah, but that is what the sound travelling through whatever matter it is kind of makes. And every cell, every atom in the universe sort of vibrates at a certain frequency, which is measured by the hertz. So, yeah, and that's what's kind of, I guess that's the starting point, isn't it? It's just understanding that everything is vibration. We are vibrating. Everything in our body is vibrating. Everything in our mind and our brain is vibrating at a frequency. And we also have our brain wave patterns, which feels different to the physical atoms in our body sort of vibrating, the sort of brain wave patterns that we have. That seems to be a kind of like our inner frequency, the frequency that relates to our thoughts, our mood, our
mind state.
Yeah, exactly. The overall mind state is our brain wave patterns, because we know that we move through different brainwave patterns as we go through the day.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're nice and relaxed, there's a certain brainwave pattern. We're usually in a kind of an alpha brainwave pattern. If we're busy, we're usually in beta. If we're asleep, in a deep sleep, we're in delta. And they're all different. So there's different reasons for that, I guess. Different reasons that we have our different brainwave patterns, because they also trigger different physiological... what's the word I'm trying to say that's from?
Effects, consequences?
Yeah, so like if we're relaxed, the body relaxes, the stress levels come down. If we're busy and in beta, you know, cortisol will get fired off, adrenaline, all that sort of thing. So it's needed in different circumstances. So there's reasons that we have these different, I guess, inner frequencies and patterns. And that leads us into sound healing, I think, because we can use that either to our benefit or not, essentially. Because if we're always in our high active, there's like high beta, which is kind of stressed. It's anxiety. So we can use sound healing actually to take us into a different brainwave pattern.
So we'd be using entrainment.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, so that's the, I think that's, again, the key of sound healing is entrainment, because it's, I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it. So it's the internal brainwave that then comes into contact with an external sound wave, and we can, and then they start to move at the same frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are, I say, high beta and we're stressed, and then we listen to some beautiful mantra music, that is a very nice low frequency, our brainwave pattern starts to slow down and starts to move into the same groove, basically. They start to move at the same time, and then that sends those signals to the body of, now we're calming down, and this is, and all those lovely, yeah, sort of physical benefits happen as a result.
Well, also, sound can be felt as well as heard.
Yeah.
So sound, even if we don't hear it, our body hears it.
Yes, exactly. It is a physical vibration that moves through every part of the body. So the skin, the bone, the liquid in the body, the organs. So no matter where we are, and I always do this at the beginning of any sessions, whether it's yoga or any kind of sessions, to say, start listening to the sounds around you that we don't even notice. So especially when we're outside. So if we do it on the beach or something, like now, it's only when I tune in, I can hear the leaves rustling. I can hear the birds. I can hear some other external noises, the wind, for example. But that was always there, and that's always making a impact on our physical and our mental sort of states.
Literally an impact.
Yeah, but we just don't realize it. So we can be wandering around and wonder why we're feeling a certain way without actually noticing what's happening around us. Like, we kind of know that if you walk in a natural environment, so in a field or a forest or somewhere like that, that it's a very calming influence on our nervous system. So we don't have to do anything to get that calming influence, do we? Just by being in nature, and the sound of it, I think, is a huge part of that. There's the visual element of the beautiful, you know, flowers or nature or whatever we're looking at, but the sound element is probably the biggest part. Because I think I was reading a study around water and sort of crystals in water. And they did studies with one body of water that was played soothing music and was given nice, you know, nice words, nice vibrations. And then another body of water with heavy metal, angry words.
I love heavy metal.
Nothing wrong with it if that's where you want to be with your brainwaves. But I think that's what they were doing. And the crystals that were forming in the water, which they must have kind of man-made created these kind of crystals. And the crystal, the actual formation. So in the beautiful, you know, calm one, there were these beautiful crystal formations. And in the angry one, let's call it, there was, they were quite sort of disjointed, and it was really strange how they sort of were very, very different. And that's the influence on water. You know, it's so fascinating. And we are, as we know, kind of 60 to 70% water ourselves. So if we're listening to angry music all the time, there's got to be some sort of kind of cellular, something really going on in the body.
I just keep thinking about what an angry crystal might look like.
Angry crystal, a bit jaggedy.
Hey, that's a good name for a band.
It is, actually. I like that. So then there are the different types of sound healing. So I guess it has changed, obviously, through the ages from original, you know, the origins of sound healing, which can I mean, they date back about 40,000 years. So like the first instrument recorded was the didgeridoo, I believe. That's what I've been told. I'm sure there were before that, but you know, in terms of a played instrument, that was one of the first. And that's, I find it really fascinating how some, you know, the first person discovered that an instrument could make sound.
Mm.
You know, I find all of it fascinating. I find it fascinating around food as well. Who's the first person that cooked that particular food to find out that it was edible? But it's the same with sound, I suppose. It's like, I wonder if maybe there was, like, you know, the use of tools and the kind of, you know, the, obviously sound is everywhere. So we're talking about an instrument rather than a natural sound. Maybe kind of, I don't know, the use of tools was making a sound and they started discovering a rhythm. And I don't know, it's really fascinating, isn't it?
Well, even things like walking and talking can have a music of its own.
Yeah.
And then get kind of the music side of your brain going. And then someone picks up a couple of rocks.
Yeah,
and then banging
yeah.
it together. And exactly. then someone else starts humming. And then all of a sudden you've got a number one hit.
Exactly. And I guess what happens at that point is you realise the sensation in the body from a rhythm.
Mm.
So there's a difference between just a random sound and a rhythm. And that is that it makes you feel a certain way. So there's sort of three different things going on, isn't there? There is kind of like you say, that kind of bopping, like, oh, hello, my body's moving.
Yes.
There's the, you know, again, that sort of serotonin release. It's like, oh, this feels good. This is making me happy. And then they all kind of, and then you go, oh, but that's to do with the sound. And then I think there's always a community element as well. I think when you go back in ages and look at how sound was used in kind of community and villages, that's where the origins are. I don't think, like, now you would probably learn an instrument at home on your own and you would enjoy it. But I think back in those sort of, you know, those times, it was enjoyed as a group always, it seems. So things, I think like the drum, for example, feels to be the most connected to community always. When I look at, I don't know, looking back through kind of history and music, and it just feels like that always brought communities together. Song, drums, and that kind of like that rhythmic beat.
It's got that it kind of instinctively ritual.
Yeah, exactly.
Feeling to it.
It was always ceremonial, wasn't it? That kind of, there was usually drums involved in sort of ceremonial occasions. So, and then you go, why? You know, what was that connection? Why did drums suddenly get brought into that? And again, it's got to be that feeling that the drum evokes in your chest, in your body. You know, it's a physical kind of, you know what it's like when you're, I don't know, sat rounded with drums or with, you know, there is that physical feeling, isn't there?
Well, also our brains latch on to patterns.
Yes.
So any kind of pattern, our brain's like, ooh, what's that?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I find that interesting when I'm doing my sort of sound. I sometimes very much latch onto pattern and then sometimes very much try to make it random, because it sends people in kind of different directions. Because you know that when they're comfortable, because it's like, oh yeah, this is the rhythm, I get it. But it kind of takes you out of your comfort zone if it's a bit of a random selection of noises. And I think they're both actually quite important. But yeah, so drums, I think, are really key to sound healing, because also it's where you feel things in the body as well. And the drum feels very much kind of like lower, feels like really rooting into the earth. It's quite primal, quite in the same way as the didgeridoo. Actually, I find that really interesting. Didgeridoo is that low vibration. And if you think about, so I very often relate them to chakras in the body. And it's either lower vibrations or sort of like higher vibrations, which are more, you know, your sort of third eye up in that sort of region. But that kind of lower drums, didgeridoos.
Well, that's what we can actually feel as well.
Yeah.
So we're more likely to physically experience lower tones like that than we are something higher, even singing.
Mm. Do you know why that is?
It's just how our body reacts to frequencies.
Uh-huh.
So someone, you know, drives by in a car, if they're blasting classical music, you don't get that kind of vibrational reverberation. Like if someone drives by listening to, listening to like rap or whatever, you know, it's like,
there's something about the bass.
And everything, and you can feel like the car must be vibrating. And
Interesting. Because it's, it's earthed, I suppose. It's like a...
It does it kind of naturally feel grounding.
So yeah, there's lots of types of instruments that you can use in sound healing. And I think they're all coming from traditions, but it's, and they've kind of been filtered through, and you know, some are definitely more popular than others. Obviously I have my beautiful crystal bowls, and they feel like they're having a trend revival. It feels like anyone that's doing sound healing has got crystal bowls, but they're incredible because, you know, they're made of crystal quartz. They are, until you kind of feel that vibration, and the ones that I have, there are obviously different ones, but mine are all connected to the frequency of a different chakra, so you kind of are going to get different sensations in different parts of the body when you're listening to the bowls being played. And they feel more kind of higher, more celestial in terms of kind of a sound. Like, you know, you've got drums that are very earthy, and then those are more, it feels like they're more kind of, because you can feel like your body's floating almost sometimes when you listen to them. And I think that is that's the vibrations all happening at once, and your sensation of feeling the vibration starts to feel like a little bit like you're floating. So it feels, it can feel otherworldly in a way, kind of.
I think it's because of the way our brain processes sound and vibration. The lower it is, because we have to make a 3D world out of what we're experiencing, the lower we automatically look down or feel down. But the higher frequencies, if you think about what your brain's doing, it is raising. Does that make any sense?
Totally.
Popped in my head.
Totally. It's higher frequency, isn't it? So it is, I suppose, physically higher.
But if you like think about a low frequency and then think about a high frequency, see, I automatically did this up and down with my hands.
It's raising the vibrations, which is
raising, so you feel
you can physically feel lifted. And then there are just some that are just feel, I've got these chimes, so my sort of Koshi chimes, and I've got some sonic chimes, and that, because I'm an observer, so when I'm playing, I observe how people react, and they're lying down with their eyes closed, so there's not huge reactions, but I can definitely sense and tell different instruments have different kind of reactions. And I think the chimes, everyone always loves them. It seems like it relaxes. It's like being maybe a child again, that kind of, you know, the sort of like, I don't know if you had music and kind of chimes above cots and that sort of thing, but it's that sort of, and you know, like musical boxes when you were younger, that kind of ding, that very sort of plinky, plinky plonky. And I wonder if it's accessing a part of a memory, some of them.
Do you think that's why ice cream trucks have that music?
Yeah, probably. That's to evoke a memory, because that's another whole part of sound and music that I find absolutely amazing, is how it can evoke a memory even when your memories are fading. It's music that kind of stays with you. It stays as a kind of a long-term kept memory. And I think they do. It's repetition, I think. It's like an advert. So I feel like that's more marketing than a really lovely... But, you know, like an advert with a jingle, and it's like, oh, you'll hear that jingle and you'll go, oh, yeah, and it'll remind you and you'll be in a... You know. So I think it's that sort of thing in terms of picking a very clever musical... you know what I mean? Sort of something that will get you that memory going. But I think, with the chimes, I think there is like a bit of a childhood memory attached to it. Because it's just that sort of very gentle sort of plinking, plinking, plinking. And that's really lovely. Because they're all there to evoke some sort of reaction or memory, or, you know, that entrainment. So it's kind of, Because you know, don't you, if you're, I don't know, if I'm trying to concentrate on something and I'm listening to music, and it can be quite sort of subtle music, but suddenly something will really take me out and I can't concentrate. That's just really distracting. And there's no real reason for it, but I'll have to turn it off because I'm getting distracted. So it's so subtle, I think, the reactions of music to your brainwave patterns, but then also how that filters down into the nervous system, into the emotions and memories as well, I think.
Well, everyone's different as well. So even though scientifically certain frequencies are supposed to do certain things, if for whatever reason you dislike a particular sound, for whatever reason, even though scientifically it's supposed to quote unquote help you, it might not. If you don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, because people definitely react differently to different things, to different sounds and different frequencies. And I think I always say sometimes there's maybe a reason behind that. Because if something is jarring, maybe there is a blockage around that. Maybe there's something that needs to move through and it doesn't feel so nice.
Well, that can be used therapeutically, can't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's all an experience, whether it's a pleasant experience or some people have reactions, don't they, that aren't, like some people can feel a bit sick sometimes, get headaches, and they're not pleasant. You wouldn't go to, you know, you wouldn't necessarily pay to go to somewhere to feel a bit sick and get a headache. But in terms of the experience, because, you know, the sound waves are physically moving through your body, they're probably, you know, they can dislodge toxins as well. So that could be the headache and the sort of the feeling of sickness. And yeah, so it's
toxins, and then also in your biofield, blockages,
exactly.
Kind of dissonance in your biofield can be smoothed out by, I don't want to say aggressive sound therapy, but more stimulating.
Yeah.
Sound therapy.
Well, I think there is a distinction, isn't there, between sound healing and sound therapy. So I wouldn't say that I'm anything to do with sound therapy, because I know that my teacher, she had a brain tumor, and she had, they used sound therapy to stop the growth of the brain tumor. And I find that absolutely incredible. And it's a whole, you know, that's a whole nother level.
Yes, it is.
Terms of what we do in terms of sound healing. And then you think, well, that's healing, isn't it? So how is it maybe a different word?
Well, that's not what our definition of sound healing is.
No.
So.
Yeah, exactly. So what I always say in my sessions is I sort of say, it's called sound healing. I also call them sound baths, because I think that feels just a bit more sort of what we do, or what I do. But sound healing, I say, I can't heal you. I can just provide the instruments, the sound waves, and your body heals itself. So whatever your body needs is what you will take from the session. And that's the healing. So the healing, it's proven, there are many studies that the cells can, if you get into this beautiful state of the theta brainwave, and your body isn't using up energy in places that it doesn't need, that it can then send the energy to the places that it does need. So the healing of, what you really need in the body. So that I believe, but that's the body healing itself. That's nothing. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, the way I use sound healing is through the music that I create, and I use it in conjunction with a Reiki treatment.
Yeah, exactly. So they go double whammy, which is great. And yeah, there's lots. So tuning forks, I think, is one that's quite like you just said, more aggressive in terms of it's very targeted. So you've got each tuning fork has a different frequency that is there for a specific purpose. So I've got a few different ones that I use. There's some you can use for anxiety. There's ones you can use for, body relaxation. I've, again, ones related to chakras. So it's kind of how you want to use it, really. I think because I am interested in chakras, that's always my focus a little bit with my Tibetan bowls, which again are a different little beast because they're metal and they're kind of man-made in fire. So what I really like is the kind of the elemental aspect to it. So you've got kind of, you know, drums that feel really earthy. You've got the metal made in the fire. You've got the crystals that feel, like you say, more, you know, elevated somehow.
Fluffy.
And they all have their place, which is really lovely. And I've got water instruments that don't use physical water, but they, you know, they've got the sounds of water, which again bring in a different response in people when they hear that kind of that sort of more watery feeling. You know, it's just lovely, basically, to put them all together and come up with, yeah. So coming up with that sort of collection that takes people on a journey and allows the body just to really relax and if needs to heal itself.
It really does have to be a journey, like you said, because if we just listen to one note over an extended period of time, our brain doesn't like that.
No.
We would either lose interest or become used to it.
Yeah.
And so we wouldn't actually get the full benefit.
No.
So that's why...
I'm sure it would annoy us as well. My agitators.
Maybe.
Which takes you out of that space, I suppose, if you're thinking, why am I listening to the same?
Well, don't forget, you know how many things around us is making that kind of drone.
Oh, like a buzzing. Exactly. And once you notice it, it drives you mad. That's what I mean. Like, until I notice something, it's having an effect on my...
That's right.
You know, subconsciously, it's probably been annoying me the whole time. But once I consciously notice it, I'm like, oh my God, that noise, I can't bear it.
So even if we're not, quote unquote, noticing it, it's still affecting us.
Yeah, definitely.
Even though consciously our brain doesn't label it and bring our attention to it.
Exactly. So that's why sometimes just becoming aware of everything is really important. Like what external factors are happening to me at this very moment and how is it making me feel? Just to kind of check in is quite important, I think.
Well, then also you've got the voice.
Yes, the voice is the biggest instrument of all, really. It's our natural instrument. I mean, if I said the didgeridoo was the first instrument, the voice is probably the first instrument, but you know, we'll bypass that. But the voice is, yeah, it's so powerful. Because if you're even just talking, you're vibrating, you know, your throat is vibrating, your chest is vibrating. There's, you know, you know the difference if you're talking softly or if you're shouting, if you're angry. That's going to cause different, again, sensations, physical in the body. So, yeah, it's really important. And being, you know, singing is so releasing, I think. I run a choir, it's the Mindful Choir, and it's something that helped me when I was going through a very tough period in my life. My friend just made me join a choir and I didn't really want to. I was just like, I don't know why I'm doing this. And it honestly was so therapeutic. Like I didn't feel like I needed any sort of therapy at that time. I was just like ploughing on. And just the release of singing, also concentrating as well. That's why that kind of mindfulness element comes in. But there's definitely something about releasing sound.
Well, also it reverberates through your entire system, especially your own voice.
Yeah, exactly.
So what you say or sing or shout does have an effect on you, whether you're aware of it or not. And that's why words are so important.
Definitely, exactly. And mantras as well. There's so much around mantras and, you know, why do we do them? I think because I love mantras, I think they, you know, you have mantras that have, again, different benefits mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And I think a lot of people go, what? Even our mantra, you know, mantra seems just like, you know, a bit of singing. But I just think they're quite powerful. And again, it's ancient practices. So mantras have been passed down from, you know, God, many, many generations. And there are, so again, going back to the chakras, there are seed mantras, for example. So a word that will resonate with your chakra, release any blockages. So just that really simple kind of repeating or singing a word that's been, again, I don't know who found it out in the first place. You know, how do these things come about? I think they're amazing.
Maybe just noticing.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, people that meditated, maybe introduce chanting a mantra and just noticing the effect, yeah.
Mm.
And going, oh, that does this, and then passing it down as a gift, really, for the rest of the sort of generations to use. But yeah, I think, yeah, the voice is very powerful.
Well, I'm not a singer, so.
No, do you do any chanting or mantra or anything?
In my head, yes. I was given a mantra when I had transcendental meditation initiation, if you will. I think I was about 7 years old, and I still remember it, and I still use it. But also, it can help in a very stressful situation. Use small words, sentences like, none of my business, not my problem, none of my business, not, and you just do it over and over and over again. And if that reminds you of a certain thing you're supposed to remember, like, don't let yourself get sucked into what's going on over there, then it can work just as well as a quote-unquote official designated mantra.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anything can be a mantra, I think. And I think sometimes the power of using Sanskrit mantras and things like that is that you don't know the meaning necessarily.
Mm.
Like, because you don't attach yourself to the... I mean, usually I will explain, this is a mantra for this, but it kind of goes once you're repeating it. You're not thinking about it in the same way that you would as an English phrase.
Is that kind of like when you say the same word over and over and over again, it starts to sound like nothing?
Yeah, 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 exactly. But you're just taking the vibration and the magic, I guess. That's why I quite like using mantras that, yeah. Then, because, yeah, I think both work really well, and I think it depends what the outcome you're hoping for.
Well, we're all hoping for more positive outcomes,
exactly.
Aren't we?
Just a little bit, feel a little bit better.
Just 5%. Thank you for joining the journey here on Resonant Space.
I've been Jo.
And Heidi.
And if you want to contact us, you can get in touch at our email address, info@the-humblewarrior.co.uk. So just if you have any questions about any episodes, if you have any topics you'd like us to explore, or if you are a practitioner yourself and would like to come on the podcast and discuss a subject, that would be amazing. So yes, feel free to get in touch. Thank you.